If I may, please, I would request that I be allowed to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, ma'am. We're ready when you are.
Yes, sir. May it please the court, my name is Melissa Keene, and I'm here on behalf of Robert Eli Bernard. The issue before the court to determine is whether Bernard was, in fact, deprived of his constitutional right to an impartial jury and fair trial due to the prejudicial statements made in the presence of the panel unknown to Bernard and counsel. And I'd like to address first contention of the Commonwealth and that there was no indication in the record where this exchange, where this conversation between the Commonwealth and the court took place. And I would ask that Your Honors, looking at appendix page number 18, in which the exchange begins, and it's indicated that from the Commonwealth that that it was thought that the matter had been resolved on a guilty plea.
Ms. Keene, this,
yes,
this is Judge Petty. Looking at page 19 of the appendix and looking specifically at line 7 of that page, the court directs the prosecutor to send somebody out now to get the witnesses. And the clerk in the next line obviously is talking to the jury. Is there any indication what happened between the judge's direction to the prosecutor and the clerk addressing the jury? Is there anything that indicates whether the jury was just brought in at that point or whether they had been in the room?
I believe that in looking at the transcript as it appears in the appendix as a whole, it can be seen that the jury, that the panel was in fact present in the courtroom, because throughout the appendix there, the court reporter specifically states when the jury leaves the court, retires from the courtroom, when the jury enters back into the courtroom, and I'm looking at pages of the appendix, page 19 and 20, 62, 129, 148, 157.
Where on page 19 does it indicate when the jury came in the courtroom?
On page 19, it does not specify when the jury came into the courtroom, but our position is that on the same page 19, line 1, the court indicates the jury is here. And to me, that suggests that on the record as it exists before the court, that the jury or the panel was, in fact, present in the courtroom. And that's why once the court finished its statement to the Commonwealth to go out and get their witnesses, that the clerk immediately addresses the members of the jury and has them line up so as to put them in alphabetical order.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. And so the Commonwealth has argued as first part of its argument that the record does not reflect where this conversation took place. I would respectfully submit that the conversation, the impermissible exchange, took place in the courtroom in the presence of the panel. The transcript is part of the appendix. It's part of the record. I believe that if there was any dispute whether or not the transcript was accurately prepared, that the time for the Commonwealth to object or bring that issue to the court's attention, the trial court's attention, that time has passed. So what is before the court today, I believe, fully supports the proposition that or the belief, the assertion that this exchange did take place in the panel's presence.
Well, assuming the panel was present, we have this Lawler case where the Supreme Court of Virginia said we cannot consider any comments where the record contains no indication that the jury heard them. So even, some courtrooms are pretty vast, and so just because the court is up at the bench with the lawyers talking doesn't mean someone in the back of the room is going to hear it. So what I'm trying to figure out is, assuming the jury's present, And I mean, these comments to me suggest prejudice if heard. So how do we know, particularly in light of the voir dire, that the jury heard them?
The
veneer, I should say, technically, heard them.
I would submit that the questions that were posed to the panel did not specifically state, did anyone hear the exchange between the court and the Commonwealth in regards to the client, in regards to Mr. Bernard's initial intention to plead guilty? From our perspective, this is so fundamental to the rights of any defendant that, and it's so out of the ordinary that someone would expect for this exchange to take place, that I do not believe that any type of boilerplate questions posed to the panel could address this specific unique situation. And because Mr. Bernard and because anyone is entitled to a fair trial, I believe that this is clearly an error that cannot be cured. And just looking at the plain language and the transcript, and I don't know if it's proper for me to explain how the dimensions of a courtroom as they exist, but
well, we're bound by the record, and so I mean, you can, but we can't consider it because we accept the record as it comes before us. And so at any rate, that was the piece that I was struggling with. I mean, I've appeared in all kinds of courtrooms as a lawyer, and some are much more intimate and some are pretty big. And anyway, so I was just trying to figure out, how do we know anybody even heard this?
Well, if I may follow up on that, though, this is Judge Huff. Assume for the sake of argument that some of this or all of it was heard by members of the veneer. Is there anything to suggest that the jurors were able, or prospective jurors were able, to connect the comments made to the case that they later were selected to hear? It sounds like there were a number of cases being discussed in the courtroom at the time. This was not the only case that was being handled by the court.
And in response to that, I would submit that yes, throughout the transcript, throughout the appendix, there's mention of this situation. To begin with, the court asked if Ms. Keene is here, and then later on, when the panel is addressed by the court, I'm introduced as well as the Commonwealth attorney is, but I'm clearly introduced. And then as we later go through the appendix, the court had addressed the jury and indicated to the jury on page 21 of the appendix on line 6, "Ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for making all of you all wait. We had a problem with witnesses. And now the witnesses, or at least here, are on the way here, so we'll go ahead and select the jury." I believe that when you go back to page 18 and 19 of the appendix, and there's the discussion between the Commonwealth and the court about a case had been set, and then the witnesses were let go by the Commonwealth, I would submit that directly ties the content of the exchange beginning to the case that was actually heard. And so I think that...
Keene, this is Judge Petty again. When did you first learn of this statement by the trial court?
It was either January or February of 2014 when I was sitting at home reading the transcripts.
Okay, so after the transcripts had been prepared?
Yes, sir.
Was any attempt made to go back to the trial judge and get a written statement of facts and incidents of trial that would create a record for us as to what actually transpired there?
Yes. That, if I may, upon learning of the contents of the transcript, I had filed a motion with the circuit court, basically requesting that the to bring this exchange to the trial court's attention, to give the trial court the opportunity to determine whether there was any error committed and to correct the error if that had been possible. And the trial court entered an order stating that it did not have jurisdiction on the matter.
That was after the 20, but there's no written statement of facts submitted to the trial court. That is, am I correct on that?
That is correct. This jury trial took place on July 29th of 2013, and the transcripts were filed in January of 2014, and notice of the filing of the transcripts was filed January 27th of 2014. So,
all right, thank you.
Yes, sir. And then returning back to the Commonwealth's argument, believe that it indicates that even if the individuals had heard these statements, that there was no proof that there was any error committed, and I would respectfully submit that that with these statements having been made and there being evidence to show that there was a potential, at least a potential, for these panel members to hear this exchange, that it's on the Commonwealth to prove that this error was harmless. And with all due respect to the Commonwealth, I do not see that there's any way that these statements made could be anything other than simple, egregious errors that cannot be corrected. And even if it had been brought to my attention, Mr. Bernard's attention, I do not believe that there could have been any instructions necessarily given to correct the harm. But I don't think that we even get to that point, because we were not advised of this exchange and instead proceeded with the trial, and it wasn't until months after the fact that this exchange was discovered.
Ms. Keene, you are at that 3-minute mark. You're welcome to continue on, or you can reserve the rest of the time.
I wish to reserve the remainder of the 3 minutes.
Very well. Ms. Johnson?
Good morning, and may it please the Court. This is Victoria Johnson for the Commonwealth. I apologize. I had some technical difficulties on my end this morning when I was trying to dial into the argument, so I apologize that there was some confusion about my presence. This conviction should be affirmed because the defendant hasn't borne his burden on appeal to show trial court error. This appeal is based on speculation. There is nothing in the record that clearly establishes that the veneer was in the courtroom and actually heard the discussion between the trial court and the prosecutor, about which the defendant now complains. And even had the veneer heard it, there's nothing establishing that the veneer was prejudiced by it and was rendered partial in the cause. And beyond there just being no indication that the veneer was present, the circumstances of the case.
Ms. Johnson?
Yes.
This is Judge Petty. Are you on speaker?
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Oh,
if you could pick up the handset, please. Thank you.
Oh, you know what? I thought that I was off speaker, but I was talking into the handset and had the speaker still on.
Much better.
As I said, I was having some technical difficulties this morning. I apologize. Do I need to start over?
No, we're fine.
Oh, no, you're fine.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much. I apologize. I am not good at phone arguments. The circumstances of this case, the circumstances of the record, indicate that the veneer was not present while the conversation was going on. This can be seen through the court's treatment of the jury. The court, during voir dire, explained the purpose of voir dire. the trial court told the veneer, if you've heard the case discussed and you've made a decision based on what you've heard that can't be changed, you shouldn't sit on the case. That's at Appendix 20. And these instructions from the court were through Appendix 20 through 25. Again, the court said, if you've heard something about the case that's caused you to form an opinion that can't be changed, then you shouldn't sit on the case. The veneer affirmed at Appendix 29 that they hadn't heard anything about the case, hadn't seen anything in the paper, seen anything on TV, or gained any knowledge about the case. They hadn't formed any opinion about the case before today. They were not sensible of any bias or prejudice. The court also instructed the veneer that they should not consider anything the attorneys say as evidence at Appendix 46 to 47, and instructed the veneer that a juror's function is to determine facts from evidence presented today at Appendix 48. Furthermore, the trial court was careful to send the jury out when taking up matters relating to the delay. That's at Appendix 148 to 57. There was a matter regarding a released witness, I believe a chain of custody witness. The trial court was careful to send the jury out so that the jury wouldn't hear any discussion. It would make no sense for the court to do that if the court had seen the veneer sitting in the back of the courtroom while having this, which I think from the transcript might have been a slightly heated discussion with the prosecutor about scheduling the case. So the circumstances of the case certainly indicate that the jury was not present. The defendant has made the point that throughout the transcript there are the kind of stage directions from the court reporter, the court reporter's notes about the jury going in and out. That seems to start once the trial begins formally. At pages 18 and 19, it's apparent that someone leaves the courtroom on page 19, that the prosecutor sends someone out to get the witnesses. It doesn't appear that the formal court reporter notes have started at that point. And as to whether, you know, even assuming that the veneer heard the comments, we have the Lawler case that I believe Judge McCullough mentioned. We just can't assume. We also have the Mueller case that is cited in the Commonwealth's brief. And in Mueller, there was a conversation amongst the veneer prior to voir dire where one prospective juror mentioned to another that she had heard that the defendant had confessed, and the veneer was discussing that. And the Supreme Court of Virginia found that that was not prejudicial. And that was discussing a confession. And you know, on this record, we just don't have any evidence of prejudice that the veneer heard this conversation, or that even if it were heard, which we don't know from the record, that it affected the jury in any way. And for those reasons, the Commonwealth would ask that the court affirm the conviction. And I'm happy to answer any questions the court may have.
I have none, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Sounds like there are no questions, and so, Ms. Keene, for your remaining 3 minutes.
Yes, sir. I would just ask for the court to take into consideration that the statements that were made to the jury by the court were not specific to the situation at hand. The court did not address the exchange between the court and the Commonwealth, and I respectfully submit that a representation by the Commonwealth attorney as an officer of the court to the court that an individual had planned on pleading guilty, that the matter had been resolved on a guilty plea, that in and of itself is a distinct situation from that of one juror discussing with another that he or she thought that the defendant had initially confessed, and I would ask that the court consider the record as it exists, and again the fact that there were no objections lodged as to the transcript during the time, which would have been appropriate, so the record that the court has before it clearly states again on appendix page 19 on line
1, the court stating the jury is here. And then a few lines later, the clerk addressing the members of the jury, I would respectfully submit that the panel was, in fact, in the courtroom, that there was no indication that they did not hear this exchange between the court and the Commonwealth, and that the Commonwealth has not proven that this was merely harmless error. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is now stand submitted, and we'll move on.